Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Would you please turn in your Bibles to 1 Peter, the first chapter. 1 Peter 1. It's good to see all of you this morning. I hope you're having a good Lord's Day. Especially, we're glad to see those of you who are visiting with us today. We're so glad that you've chosen to include us as part of your day, and we'd like you to stay around for a little while and let us get to know you a little bit better. I have visiting with me today my mother, Doris Pope, and a family friend, Rosemary Hanley, and my son-in-law, Robert Brunk, is here on business today. So I have several visitors, and I hope, please make sure that you get to meet all of them. My mother and Rosemary were here Wednesday night, and I just forgot to mention it. So I wanted to make sure and mention it and let you and them know how much I appreciate them being here today. Today I'd like to talk about aliens. And I'm not talking about aliens, the kind that come from Mars and are characterized in some sci-fi novel. I am not even really talking about aliens, the kind that we see in the news portrayed very often as people who are illegal aliens. That means someone who is in this country without the appropriate documentation, and therefore they have slipped across the border in some way and are working and operating in this country without being here according to the legal processes that someone would normally go to be able to immigrate to a country. But I do want to talk about what is discussed in 1 Peter and in a few other passages about Christians, because Christians are described as aliens. In 1 Peter, the first chapter in verse 1, he says, "Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who reside as aliens scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, who are chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father by the sanctifying work of the Spirit, to obey Jesus Christ and to be sprinkled with his blood, may grace and peace be yours in fullest measure." Here the word alien is used to describe Christians. There are a couple of words that are used in the New Testament to talk about aliens primarily, and those carry with them two different ideas. One is the idea of a resident alien. That means someone who is living regularly among people that are not there from their home nation. And we have a nation full of resident aliens. There are people who are full well documented who wind up living in the United States but have not taken advantage of the opportunities for citizenship. There are people who are undocumented who live as resident aliens in the United States, which means that they just are not citizens of this particular country, although they live here, although they may work here, although they may have children who are born here and who have thus become citizens of the United States. The word that I want to talk about this morning primarily, though, is the one that is used in 1 Peter 1 and verse 1, and that is a word that carries with it the idea of someone who is a non-resident alien. That means someone who is just passing through. And I have never been a resident alien in a foreign country, but quite often I have been a non-resident alien in another country, in which I've traveled through another place and been not a citizen of that country, and therefore I had to recognize that I had to really watch my P's and Q's to make sure that I was where I needed to be and what I needed to do, and recognize that I did not have the advantage of normal American citizenship to take care of me in many situations. But I had to behave myself in such a way so that I kept my head low and didn't necessarily do anything to make someone think that I was out against the government in that particular country. I go to Ethiopia about every other year, and it's interesting to live temporarily in a country where we are not technically free. Ethiopia is a country that, while it is not too bad for Africa, is a mess because you have one tribe that basically is about 6% of the population who controls almost all the political offices in the country. So therefore, you have most of the people with very little confidence in the government, and you have 6% of the population who basically have everything that the government benefits from, benefiting one particular tribe in a country that has about 85 different tribes. Guess how I act when I'm there? I don't get involved in the politics there. You don't see me parading around the streets, demonstrating in the streets of Addis Ababa. You don't see me out trying to pass out pamphlets in Debrecen or Nazareth, trying to tell people that they really need to change their government. Cicero, years ago, the Roman, defined the attitude that non-resident aliens needed to have in the country. He said they need to maintain an attitude of indifferent and uncurious attitude about what happens. And I do my best to act as indifferent and as uncurious about what happens when I'm over in those countries, because I don't want to do anything that's going to make me look like a troublemaker there where I won't get to go back. That means I have to recognize that there's going to be soldiers in an awful lot of places where I don't normally see soldiers in the United States. That means that while I may talk to somebody about my particular preference politically in the United States, I'm very, very careful about what I say about political preferences there, as are the Ethiopians, because I am a non-resident alien. I'm just passing through. And while I have concerns about the rites that people there have to worship, and frankly, even though it is not a free country, it is a country that has made it fairly easy for people to be able to worship as they would like to worship, I don't want to do anything to make a problem for those who have to live in that country, because I'm just passing through. I'm just a non-resident alien. There may be a little curiosity that I have, but in many ways I am uncurious and indifferent about what goes on there, because when I go, my purpose is there to preach and to teach and to try to teach others how to preach while I'm there. I'm just passing through. I'm not establishing my residence in Ethiopia, which is a comfort to Marianne, I'm sure. This word is used in the scriptures, not only here in 1 Peter, the first chapter in verse 1, to talk about the way Christians operate, but also in the second chapter in verse 11 of the same book, 1 Peter. It says, "Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul." Here is someone who is just passing through this earth. Don't do anything that is going to misuse your lusts, that is going to cause those to wage war against your soul and make it impossible for you to get back home. You see, that's the problem that very often people who are Christians fall into. Is just passing through, as people whose citizenship, as is described in the third chapter of the book of Philippians in verse 20, our citizenship, it says, is in heaven. Sometimes we become so caught up in this world and what goes on in it, our attitude is not one of indifference and uncuriosity. Our attitude sometimes tends to be people who set down deep roots in this world and live in a world as if our citizenship is in the United States of America rather than in heaven. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm glad that I have a passport that says I'm a citizen of the United States of America. But I want you to know that ultimately my citizenship is in heaven. And even though I may take a casual interest in the politics of what's going on in reference to this election, and I have my opinions about it, Yet I want you to know that whoever wins this election in November, that it ultimately is taking place in a realm that is not the realm that I think most important. And that is, my citizenship is in heaven. I don't want to do anything in this life. I don't want to become so engaged in this life and in this world that anything keeps me from being able to get back home. And I think what we need to recognize as we think about the elections, as we think about an education, as we think about a job, as we think about certain circumstances that are all part of our lives as non-resident aliens here in this world, we need to understand that that's the way it is. Don't let anything wage war against your soul to such an extent that you don't get to go home. Because home is the goal that we as Christians need to constantly be looking toward. It tells us, this word that is used for non-resident alien is used several times in Scripture. In Acts the 17th chapter, for example, when it's talking in a completely secular sense, it talks about those in Athens who were non-resident aliens in the area around Athens. In verse 21, it tells us, now the Athenians and the strangers visiting there, that's the same word that's used for alien in 1 Peter, the first chapter in verse 1. And the strangers visiting there used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. Here you had people who were looking for something. And I'll tell you, it's something that we need to make up our minds that while we live as non-resident aliens in this particular world, we need to look for something. We need to make sure that we're not involved in vain curiosity like the people in Athens were, but almost all non-resident aliens are looking for something. People who have come to this country to work for a while so that they might be able to make enough money to be able to go back to their country and live a better life are looking for something, and they're looking for something better. As we live in this particular world, let's make up our minds that we're going to look for something better. Not just the curiosities of this world. Not just the things that make up this world and make it something that may even try to sway through the siren song of this world our attention away from the important things of heaven. But make it be something that, as we look for something, is looking for something that's greater, that's better. In the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, as you'll recall, there in that great hall of fame of faithful throughout the ages, it talks to us there about those who, as aliens, in the same sense that we're talking about here today, were people who were looking for something that was better. In the 10th verse of chapter 11, here it says, as it talks about the faith of Abraham, it tells us in verse 9 that he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. He was looking for something better, although during his entire life he operated according to the promise that God had given him in the 12th chapter of the book of Genesis, about being able to possess this land for his descendants. But I want you to recognize that Abraham didn't own any land in the land of Canaan except burial property for his wife during his entire lifetime. But he was looking for something, and he was looking for something better. And he recognized that if he kept faith with God, if he kept keeping his mind on the promise and on the prize that God had in store for him and his descendants, that he would be able to live one day with the full knowledge that God had something better for his people in the land. But you know, even beyond that, he was looking for a country, a city who has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. There were two things Abraham was looking for as a non-resident alien. He was looking for something that would make good provision for his descendants, but he was also looking for a city that has foundations whose builder and maker is God. He had left Ur behind a long time ago. He had left Haran behind a long time ago. And he lived as someone who was always vulnerable as a non-resident alien in the land of Canaan. And we see that vulnerability showing itself in times when Abraham would lie about his wife not being his wife. Claim that she was his sister, which was only half true. It was his half-sister, but the main relationship that they sustained was that of husband and wife, and he denied it. We see other situations in which Abraham, basically even in the situation where he purchases the cave of Machpelah, is taken advantage of terribly by the person there by asking an exorbitant sum for the amount of money that Abraham has offered for that particular cave. Man says, here, take it. You can have it. What's $3 million between friends? It's not $3 million, but he mentions an exorbitant sum. And Abraham peels off the money and gives it to him there in the witness of everyone, so that everyone would recognize that the cave belonged to him. Probably wouldn't have happened in a situation in subsequent years where Israelites control the land, but it sure is the kind of thing that can happen as you're taken advantage of when you're in a foreign country where you are not a resident. In 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, in verse 7, it talks about how, as we live in this world, it's important for us as aliens to recognize that we walk by faith and not by sight. We are people who live in a world in which we have to recognize that you don't have the same kind of security, and you don't have the same kind of knowledge and the same kind of confidence at living in this world as you can have in a country in which you are a citizen. There are a lot of things that we don't worry about as citizens of the United States that aliens, non-resident aliens, have to worry about. They have to worry about their green cards expiring. They have to worry about making sure that they get their paperwork taken care of properly. Some people who haven't had their paperwork taken care of properly are nervous every time they see a situation in which there are law enforcement officers. One of the reasons that automobile insurance is so high in Houston, where I used to live, is because there are so many people there who are non-resident aliens who are undocumented, that if you get in a car accident with someone who is undocumented as an alien, they most likely will leave the scene of the crime, because they're not particularly concerned about that car. They may leave the car because they're concerned primarily about being able to stay in the United States. They may take their car and hit you and go off someplace else. And boy, that really makes it to where the insurance really charges you more and more, because there's no one that they can charge. You see, we need to recognize that we walk by faith and not by sight. We're not citizens here. Our citizenship is in heaven, and therefore we have to walk by faith, trusting in God, trusting in our King, rather than whoever may be president here in the United States or whatever government may vote on here in the United States. We are people who live as non-resident aliens and must live according to the circumstances in which we find ourselves. In the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, in verse 7, it says, "By faith Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith." Here, even though he's told about the world flooding, in a world in which it may not yet have rained, Noah still walks by faith rather than sight. And he builds an ark for the salvation of his family because God told him to. I imagine that brought a great deal of joy and ridicule from those who lived round about him. There's Noah building that ark. What's that for? Well, there's going to be a great flood. What's a flood? A flood is where water comes up and covers everything. Water will fall from the sky and come up from the floodgates of the earth and flood the earth. And there's no evidence that they see of it round about them. And I imagine they laughed at old Noah, who spent 100 years building that ark. But yet, when all was said and done, they were the ones beating on the door of that ark to be let in. And it still had to probably hurt Noah not to be able to let them in because God himself had closed the door. He walked by faith and not by sight. There's a lot of things in reference to this world as non-resident aliens that we need to be naive about concerning this world and just not know. That's one of the things that non-resident aliens often find themselves in, is they wind up being naive about the way things operate in this particular country. They just don't know what's happening. I've traveled in other countries before and always had to be very, very careful about pickpockets. It's interesting, in most countries of the world, you're less likely to be murdered than you are in the United States, but you're much more likely to get your pocket picked. And I've often been with people who wound up having their pockets picked in situations because they were just naive as people who were not used to the circumstances in the country in which they were visiting. I've always told people, if you have a group of young people that gather around you and are up close against you and touching you, the best thing for you to do in a foreign country is start hollering. If you know the word for thief, holler thief, and guess what? They'll scatter. But for you to just stand there, you know what's eventually going to happen? You're going to be touched so much that they're going to slip that wallet out or they'll take that purse away. And before you know it, you are gone because you just were so naive, you didn't realize how people who live there operate when you have those kinds of groups around. In fact, they look for groups who are naive, who are non-resident aliens, to try to steal from them. Satan tries to operate that way with us. Therefore, what we have to do is to make sure we don't conform to our former lusts. In 1 Peter, the first chapter, in verse 14, do you remember there, as Peter talks about this issue, he says, as obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts that were yours in your ignorance. There's a certain amount of naivete that we need to make sure that we get over as we live in this particular world, because this world is trying to make us part of it rather than us maintaining our citizenship in heaven. And we've got to make sure that we don't conform to our former lusts, that we live consistently with the way the Lord would have us to live. We have to be holy as the Lord is holy. You remember in 1 Peter, the first chapter in verse 2, we saw the idea of the sanctifying work of the Spirit. Sanctify means to make holy, to be set apart. And here we need to make sure that the sanctifying power of the Spirit-inspired Word changes us and makes us people who live differently than the people who live round about us. In the 15th and 16th verses of chapter 1, it says, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves in all your behavior, because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. In verse 22 of the same chapter, it says, since you have in obedience to the truth purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart. We've been sanctified, we've been made holy, we've been purified, and therefore there's an obligation that we have as citizens of heaven to live differently than this world that we live in. Because God is looking and expecting great things of us and longs for the day when we can come back home. In chapter 2 of 1 Peter, in verse 5, it says there, "You also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." Here, as he uses the figure of a temple, we're being built up in a spiritual household, all of us, as a holy priesthood, a priesthood that is set apart for God's use, not for the use of this world in which we are just passing through. In verse 9 of chapter 2, we see this idea, "And as for you, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." Can you imagine being a holy nation? Even though we're not at home yet, we're still a holy nation, a people set apart by God to influence the world in which we live and not be influenced by it to such an extent that we allow our former lust to keep us from being able to make that journey home. God has great expectations for us, and we need to make sure that we follow through with them. In chapter 3 of 1 Peter, in verse 2, he says, "As you are talking about wives being submissive to their husbands, so that they can be won without a word as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior." You see, not only women, but men also ought to live lives that are chaste in a world that is becoming sex crazy, and in which you can't hardly turn your television on at any hour of the day or night without seeing sex used as advertisement, sex being used as the main issue that's involved in many of the television programs that are discussed. It being discussed as something that is common or unclean, and as if it just matters so little that it can be conducted between people who barely know one another. Do you see, we need to be people who live chaste lives, because only then can we be holy before the Lord. He describes this being the reason that in verse 5, "For this way former times the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands." Here the idea of a world in which we are being influenced constantly to turn against the standard idea of one man and one woman for life, of husbands being the head of the families. We see a feminization of America to a large extent, in which you find women somehow feeling degraded to have the position of wife and mother. Yet it talks about what holy women of old used to do. Women that were set apart. Women that were what God wanted them to be. Women that were sanctified for the purposes that God had them set aside. In verse 15 of chapter 3, it says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that's in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts. Who are our heroes in this world? Do they become the sports figures of today that'll be gone tomorrow? Are they the political figures that exist that do wind up wielding great power in the country in which we stand as non-resident aliens? Are they people who are movie stars or people who are television stars who wind up perpetuating all kinds of things that are inconsistent with our citizenship? Or are our heroes the one that we sanctify in our heart, Jesus Christ, as Lord in our lives? You see, there is a sense in which, as good as our life is here in so many ways, in terms of our physical comforts, we hardly can understand what people mean when we talk about this world as a vale of tears because we've got it so good. We need to recognize that in the real sense, this world is a veil of tears, and that we need to understand that to go home and be with the Lord is something that we ought to long for. And one day, those who have lived holy lives, who have not conformed to their former lusts, who are people who are as holy like God is holy, who sanctify Christ in their hearts, are going to be the people who make it home. C.S. Lewis once wrote that he enjoyed traveling through England and stopping at little places that were bed and breakfast, we might call them in this country. A nice little cozy place where you could have a nice bed that was in a room that was decorated in such a quaint way. A place where you might be able to go out and even have a desk there where you could do some writing. A place that had beautiful woods where you could go and take a walk and come back in and have afternoon tea with the lady that owned the house, and she just had the right kind of cookies and the right kind of tea that made it such a wonderful experience. And he talked about the kind of places that he liked to visit as he went around in England and different places, and talked about the warm feelings he had and good memories that he had of many places like that. But he said, you know, as much as I enjoyed those circumstances, I never ever was tempted to mistake them for home. There are places I've enjoyed visiting on vacation, but you know, I've never mistaken them for home. Let's make sure as non-resident aliens we don't mistake this world for home, because God has made something better for us. And when you think about it, with its suffering, with its discouragement, with its frustrations, you have to realize at darker times that this isn't a place fit for God's children. In the 32nd chapter of the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah, the prophet who has been telling the people to surrender to Babylon because the Babylonian exile is going to take place, he's been telling the army to lay down its arms and the king to surrender, and that certainly doesn't make him considered a great patriot by the people of Judah. But the Lord, in the midst of all of this, in chapter 32, tells him that he wants him to go and buy a field in Anathoth. Isn't that strange? The people are going to go away captive. The land is going to be forsaken except for the poorest that are left in the land. And the Lord tells him, I want you to go buy a field at Anathoth. You know why? Because the Lord wanted to let him understand that there was hope that the Israelites would be able to come back into the land. And 70 years after the first captives, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are taken away captive, 50 years after the fall of Jerusalem in 586, in 536, under Zerubbabel and Jeshua, you are going to have people who come back to the land. And the Lord is illustrating that by telling Jeremiah to make an investment in the land in which they will come back to, not to think about it simply as the land they left. We need to recognize that Christians must also be ready to go home. In 1 Peter, the first chapter in verse 13, there the writer says, therefore prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Don't let this election, don't let the media, don't let the people of this world make you think that you can fit in here, because if you're going to live as a Christian, you're never, ever going to completely fit in here. Your citizenship is in heaven, and we need to be people who have invested in the future, just like Jeremiah was, and to make sure that as we live our lives, We live our lives constantly waiting for the revelation of Jesus Christ, in which he will be able to take this mortal body and change it into one that is like his glorious body. And we can live forever with the Lord in the shadow of his wings. Where's your citizenship this morning? If you're not a child of God, you have citizenship in this world rather than in the next. You need to correct things while there's time and opportunity by believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, by repenting of the things that you've done that are wrong, by confessing that Jesus Christ is God's Son, and by being baptized so that you can have all your sins washed away and you can be added to the Lord's church and you can become his child. We'd love to help you in that this morning if that's your desire. If you, as a child of God, have become disloyal to the King, if you've set your roots down too deep in this world, don't walk by sight, walk by faith. And make up your mind that you're going to change whatever is involved in those lusts of this world and turn things around. Repent. And the Lord has promised that he's faithful and just to forgive you of your sins and to cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Think about these things, and if we can help you in your obedience to the Lord this morning, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.